From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on November 12th, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. On this episode of The Lead, we're having a special episode because I'm out of town. I'm out of town for a post-election trip to the mountains. A retreat, if you will. I'm off to find myself. But I didn't want to leave you hanging, so we have my conversation with Wall Street Journal reporter and New York Times best-selling author Valerie Borlein on her book, The Devil at His Elbow, Alec Murdoch, and the Fall of a Southern Dynasty. Before we get to that conversation, I want to remind you that The Lead loves hearing from you. That's why we have a voicemail box set up at 803-563-7169. Let us know if you've read Valerie's book, if you're tired of the whole Murdoch family. I know I kind of am, but I was fascinated by this book. Or who's the devil at your elbow? Let us know, 803-563-7169. Like I said at the top, today's episode is my interview with the instant New York Times bestselling author Valerie Borlein, who covered the Alec Murdoch trial day in and day out in early 2023 for the Wall Street Journal. I opened my interview by asking her about the journey from the daily reporting of this disturbing and tragic story turned into a gripping nonfiction depiction of generations of a family drunk on power, excess, and fraud that culminated in the murders of Maggie and Paul Murdoch, the wife and son of Alec, in June 2021.
You know, I should say I had the privilege of working in Columbia for 4 years and covering state politics out of the State House. And I kind of tasked myself with going to all 46 counties because South Carolina is such a fascinating place. And I had been to Hampton. And so I cover the South still for the Journal. And I keep close tabs on South Carolina because, you know, I live in North Carolina, but South Carolina, y'all are just way more interesting. I was following the Murdoch case from the time of the boat wreck in 2019 when Mallory Beach was tragically killed. And so when the homicides happened, it was just jaw-dropping, right? It really was. It wasn't immediately clear to me what the Wall Street Journal version was, but my top editor, a guy named Matt Murray, asked me whether I was following it. And I was like, yeah. And I said to him, what's the Journal version of this? And he's like, Val, sometimes a good story is just a good story. And he was right. But it also ended up being a classic Journal story of money and power in a place that's just inherently interesting. So I came down for the first time in July of 21 and spent the better part of 4 months on the ground and 3 years working on this book. And it became clear very early on that there was much larger story here and a lot to say about South Carolina history through the lens of this family.
And I remember reading your work during this time, too, because you would give a very solid overview. I feel like a lot of times during the case, the ongoing ins and outs, back from the boat crash up and through the trial, it was hard to maybe get a grasp because there's so much coming out bit by bit and then big pieces would come out. But you'd give that overall national perspective, which really clarified a lot of things. And you do the same in your book, which is a captivating read. And early in the book, you looked at the generations of Murdochs because there have been so many of them and so influential there in Hampton County, talking about how they essentially used the law to commit fraud to prop up this image of wealth and privilege and success and power in their fiefdom that was Hampton County. And then Alec and his uncontrollable son, Paul, seem to bring it all down, essentially, is what the book shows. Trace for us this family lineage and how we got to this point.
Yeah, you know, I think it is just such a rich, rich tapestry to work with. And I think you have to understand that in South Carolina, especially in that part of the Low Country, the Civil War really hits different. I mean, in a place like Hampton County, where Sherman marched through with, 60,000 troops in 1865, the economy was destroyed for a generation. And Reconstruction in that part of the world just failed. It fell apart, right? And so the Murdoch family story really starts in the 1880s when Hampton County was founded, named after Wade Hampton, when the local, upcountry whites decided to found a white county. They literally did. And that was Hampton County. And the Murdochs were some of the founding families that moved there. It was the Confederate aristocracy. Alec's great-great-grandfather was a Confederate officer. So they moved there and started a new government, a new place where they ruled, really. And when Randolph Murdoch Sr., Alec's grandfather, went to law school at Columbia and came home and started working and started this family law firm in 1910, it really started the iron hold on this fiefdom, as you say, to run it. It's extraordinary.
I know one of the passages, I think one maybe the more disturbing parts of the family history was Buster, Alec's grandfather, who was almost put away by the feds. That this whole family has this way of getting close to the law and then not getting caught. And I think a lot of people feared that too with Alec there at the end. But that wasn't the case, obviously. But he was almost put away by the feds back in 1956, where he lied, stole, and cheated folks to avoid prison time for a bootlegging case. And you closed out his chapter by saying Buster had proved that the Murdochs could fix juries, corrupt sheriffs and judges, cheat on their taxes, steal from their clients, play both sides of the law, and define justice however they chose. And that's because he was also a solicitor at the time, like all the Murdochs were besides Alec. So a really disturbing precedent where you saw some similarities between that case and maybe what we saw with the future family when it came to trying to fix controversies like that boat crash in 2019 with Paul.
Well, no, it's true. And old Buster Murdoch was the solicitor from 1940 to 1986. And think about that. That is Roosevelt to Reagan. And then he kept working beyond. They changed the law to make you retire at 72. He kept working anyway as a volunteer solicitor so he could stay in power and hand over power to the third generation. But he was Alec, he said often, you know, I was born at the wrong time. I was born too late.
Kind of disturbing, right? When you think about how this works, right?
Yeah, I mean, there was a printed word and your word against my word, and your phone wasn't keeping you honest at every step. And so I think, you know, you were talking earlier about Alec and Paul, who was really a troubled, dangerous young man. And so you're talking about the nature of dynasties is to collapse. Mm. I mean, I think if you look at Chinese dynasties, the royal family, like American dynasties, like the Ford family, they collapse on the fourth and fifth generation under their own weight and privilege. And I really think, and I try to show in the book, that weight of wrongdoing and just barely skating along for 100 years collapsed from inside, generational rot, really, with Alec and then with Paul on the fifth generation.
Yeah, and that was definitely illustrated very well in the book, because you do, you know, obviously looking back in those earlier generations, you were using a lot of accounts, different accounts from newspapers and the like, and property records and details here and there. But, you know, 2019, 2021, those details were so fresh. There were so many people still alive to contribute to your book, which you talked to some 200 folks, of course. But kind of walk us through how this really kind of came down to that generation with Paul, Alec's troubled son, who had that deadly boat crash in 2019, which really started the ball rolling faster and faster down this hill.
Yeah. So Paul was, like I said, a very troubled young man. And I try to document in the book the drunken boat wreck where his blood alcohol level was 0.286, three times the legal limit. Mm-hmm. It's 19 years old. You know, it wasn't his first drunken wreck that really caused major damage. He was displaying a pattern of behavior up until the time he died. Really, there was another drunken boating incident 10 days before he died. But what happened with the boat wreck is in the 14th Circuit, those five counties, the population in each county was 20,000 people from 1920 until today, with the exception of Beaufort County. Mm-hmm. And so when you see in Beaufort with the bridge to Hilton Head in the 70s and 80s, that population goes from 20, 50, 200,000. And the Murdoch name did not mean the same thing there. So the wreck happened in Beaufort County. There was each of those young people in the boat, there were six of them, they all had a phone in their hand. There was documentation. They go to the hospital. There are cameras following every move they make. So even though Alec testified, he had his grandfather, old Buster's badge, bent over his pocket, going room to room in his official capacity, talking to witnesses, it seems. Even then, he couldn't hold back the tide of all that change, and they could not. The Murdochs ultimately could not fight off modernity.
And then it came to a head really in 2021 in June with that wrongful death lawsuit, with them looking into Alec and his financial statements, his history. And of course, you document how over the past 10 years, he had stole about $11 million from his poorest clients, from his law firm partners, from anyone he could basically get money out of. And that's it was the reason why the murders took place, essentially.
Well, I mean, you can't, and I try to show there's no dialogue or no events or scenes that are invented. You don't have to. This case is just stranger than fiction. Mm. And if you think about the afternoon of June 7th in 2021, just that crisp chronology where Alec is confronted by Jeannie Seckinger, the CFO of the law firm that his family runs, and she's sheepishly saying, there's $792,000 check we believe you cashed yourself. Think to that. Then his father is taken to, who has been ill for a number of years. His brother calls at that moment and says, "Dad's going to the hospital. This is the end. He's dying." And in fact, he was dying. He died 3 days later. And on top of that, he's staying late to prepare his financials in the wrongful death suit bought by Mark Tinsley, who was a friend turned foe. There's no one that knows us better than our former allies. And he was preparing his financials, and he knew what that was going to show. Mm-hmm. And you see in those just that couple of hours, you see him call Maggie. You see him reach out to Paul and ask him, neither of them scheduled to come home, to come home. And we know what happens just a few hours later, you know, when he makes that 911 call.
So much there in the book there, too, when we talk about the court case. Of course, we can walk through all that. A lot of chapters, a lot of details there that you document. But I wanted to just end with this. It did sound stranger than fiction. Do you think that's why this was so captivating to folks? Obviously, we're still kind of going through pandemic era stuff. There were a lot of podcasts going on. There's a lot of reporting on this. I think folks felt like they were playing along with this murder mystery. Maybe it was also just people thinking, okay, this actually does exist. This reads like a Hollywood movie here. I mean, what do you think really captivated folks?
Well, there are so many elements to that. And it was by far the most streamed court case ever on court TV. Double the numbers of Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. Some of the documentaries were the biggest programs of 2023. We were collectively captivated by it. I think, we're fascinated by true crime and always have been fascinated by detectives and procedurals and things of that nature. But it just kept changing, right? You remember, mm-hmm. We're like, wait, the housekeeper, he stole money from her children? What just happened on the side of the road over Labor Day? Every twist just got stranger and stranger. And the people he stole from, I really tried to tell their stories pretty completely because he committed over a course of a decade, stealing from motherless children and paraplegic teenager. I mean, the least of these. And I think it inured him to human feeling over time. Mm-hmm. So I really think it was all of that, just the fantastical nature of it and really where it was set, the South. I mean, it is the only place in this country that just evokes an image in your mind. And it was all of that that captivated us. And I hope with the book, what you were saying earlier, Gavin, just, you know, we followed it every minute. And I tried to really widen the frame and mm-hmm. say, this is the movie. This is the way it all fits together, beginning, middle to end.
And will it become a movie? We'll see.
He's inherently cinematic. That great South Carolinian Craig Melvin from Columbia.
Yeah.
Craig likes to call it the redneck Yellowstone. So I do think it is. Yeah. It is. There is a history there that's fantastic.
Again, that was me speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter and author Valerie Borlein about her book, The Devil at His Elbow, Alec Murdoch, and the Fall of a Southern Dynasty. A riveting account and a good gift for the true crime junkie in your life this holiday season. That's right, I'm pitching it for her. That's right, folks. Yeah, a little twisted, but whatever. It's a good book if you need any book ideas for someone in your life. Anyway, that's the pod, folks. I'm a part of your life, I like to think. We're a part of each other's lives. You can show us your appreciation by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or a voicemail at 803-563-7169. You can stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Burt is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. I tried. It came out. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.